Electronic communications. What are different electronic communications? Instant messaging, which is IM, and text messaging, which is TM. IM and TM may take place in real time or use portable communication devices like mobile phones, etc., which is very, very extensively used across industries and across people. They are preferable for one or two line of messages because this would just clutter up your emails. So if it is just a one line, can I do this? You can just text it and ask. I have sent you a mail. Can I get a confirmation of yours? So these kind of messages, you can share it through instant messages or text messages. There is a disadvantage to it as well. So a lot of people do not prefer doing official communication via IM and TM. Users find this technology intrusive. They find it very intrusive in nature and they feel that it gets distracted. So hence they would not use their mobile phones. In addition, because such messages can be interfered with easily, there is a concern about the security also. If it's a very confidential data that you're sending or confidential message, it shouldn't be in the form of IM or TM. Further, informality of such messaging may not be appropriate for business communication. Sometimes business communication, if you're sending a message to your client, some client may be okay with it, but generally is not a practice that is with. So you always prefer an email over an instant message. This has been utilized widely now because of the time and all of that people are preferring. So a lot of clients have become okay about sending an instant message instead of an email. They say that, can you WhatsApp me? So even PPTs, they ask me to WhatsApp sometimes some of my clients. So it depends on the context that it is, but generally it could be taken as an intrusive communication as well. So you have to be careful about it. Social networking. Communication highly advanced with the rise of social networking sites like your Facebook, your Twitter, your WhatsApp, Instagram, LinkedIn, all of this, you know, communication is become very, very lucid and become very, very advanced because of this, the rise of these social networking sites. For effective use of social network, one must avoid annoying the contacts by every now and then flooding them with, weekly unimportant items and just broadcasting some messages early in the morning. So you need to be cognizant about doing this kind of social networking activities with your clients. Blogs or weblogs. A blog is a website about a single person or an organization, for example, Twitter. Despite individuals' views, that their personal blogs are out of employ, sometimes, your views and your preferences may work negatively for a blog entry. So if it reaches the employer, it can impact negatively on your career as well. So hence, you have to be very cognizant while using webs or writing blogs or weblogs. Hence, it is advisable to be careful while posting personal blog entries regarding work and organization. For your personal views are fine, but with regards to your organization, you have to be careful about. Video conferencing. This aids in an organization to have real-time meetings. Right now, you can you do not. Gone are those days where people used to travel for one meeting. You just can sit here at the in your computer, and then you can speak to someone. You know, some of your client who's sitting in Texas in the real time. You know, maybe in the evening, in the common hours at 7 p.m. in the evening, you all can log in together, and you can probably be doing the discussion and finish the meeting off and come on to a decision also. So it aids people, and in the last 2 years we have seen how video conferencing has helped us. Some of the prominent video meeting apps that are used in 2021 are your Zoom app, your Skype for Business, Slack, Teams, WebEx. Choice of channel communication. So channels tend to vary in their ability to communicate information. Some may be termed as rich and some can be maybe termed as low on your richness. So handle multiple cues simultaneously. They can facilitate rapid feedback and they can be very personal. So these are some of the communication basis these factors, it can be termed whether it is rich or not. So routine messages being straightforward, because since they are straightjacketed, they do not have too much of articulation. So having low ambiguity can be carried by low richness. You do not need high richness for it. So low richness channels efficiently, while non-routine complicated messages, which are non-routine, which are one-off, they require high channel width, high richness. Filtering, as we spoke about this earlier as well. So filtering plays a very, very big barrier into effective communication. Some filtering happens when, there is a status hierarchy, and larger the number of vertical levels, greater the opportunities of filtering. So you have too many hierarchies in place, too many levels of channels operating, and then you don't know whom to reach when. So there's a tendency of filtering. So you kind of sometimes supersede and reach a particular level which you were not supposed to. So selective perception. Individuals receiving the communication selectively perceive it based on their own needs. As I mentioned earlier, that you will see what you feel like seeing. You will see with what you or your reference is there. You will see only, you will read the message only what is concerning you. You will ignore what others' perceptions are in that. So selectively perceive it based on their own needs, your motivation, your experiences, your expectations, and you may ignore the key message which is rendering communication and ineffective. Too much information can also be a reason to, if your sentences are too low, too long, and involve too many punctuations and involves too many verbiages, it might create a confusion to the receiver, and hence much could create a barrier in effective communication. Next is your emotions. People may perceive the same communication differently based on their emotional status. So depending on the kind of emotional state that you're in, depending on the composure that you have, if you're on a negative mood, you might make people, you might scrutinize the message and twist and turn it as per your mood. And then similarly, a person who is in a positive mood may make the message much more positive. Okay, so depending on the emotions, your message can get impacted. Withholding communications. This is sometimes very, very deliberate. This is very troublesome and implies that managers may not have information about various issues at hand. For example, silence regarding discrimination. So the managers may not, either they are not in a position to spell out anything, or they know the fact, but they're still mum about it. Okay. So, for example, silence towards discrimination, silence towards harassment, corruption, etc. So this means that senior management cannot take an action to eliminate. So they probably have done earlier, but then they have not seen any action. So what they will do is they will develop into a habit of just ignoring all of this. So then this creates a lot of disparity in communication, and the communication becomes very ineffective with your teams. Individual apprehensions. Some people experience undue stress and anxiety in oral or written. So some people are very bad with written, and some people are very bad with oral. Okay, so they go through extreme amount of anxiety the moment they have been told that you have to make a presentation tomorrow. Okay, so they find it very tough to interact when there is a oral communication. They may rely on emails when call would be quicker and ideal. Okay, so this would be an individual apprehensions. Just because, but whereas when you're trying to make an email communication, the other person always prefers a presentation over an email, a call over an email. So there could be an individual apprehension to be able to make the communication ineffective. Inaccurate information sharing. Individuals tend to outrightly misrepresent or simply lie. What do you do in that case? Simply lying. The problem arises due to lack of unique verbal or non-verbal cues to identify this misrepresentation. You may not have the exact proof of the lie, okay? But if the person is lying deliberately, and it can just lead into an ineffective, because whatever you're doing basis what the person has given you the information, you cannot distort it further. You cannot add on your own, because you have to process the information as you have received, and the person has already lied to you. right? So to identify this misrepresentation or preparedness of the person indulging in lying in order to convince. So in order just to convince it to be able to get the approval, the person might be just simply lying, saying that, you know, I have 5 leads. If you give this order, I'm sure this, you know, the payment and everything will be with us in the next 1 week. Whereas not even out of those 5 leads, only 2 have confirmed, 3 have not even confirmed. Okay, so simply lied because he wants the approval. Right? So this makes the communication very ineffective. Cultural issues, we've been talking about it, cross-cultural factors, increased communication issues. The main factors are your language difficulties, contextual differences in terms of, you know, cross-cultural communications. So if you are aware of, like, right now what is happening across the borders, we don't know. If you're unaware of it, like, let's say, you know, what is happening in, you know, Kabul and the Taliban's issue and all of that. If we are not able to, you know, discuss what is happening there. For example, you're talking to somebody, one of your team members are operating from there. And at least you should know what is happening around there. So that could be a great, a difference if you are not aware about each other's contextual evidences which are happening, contextual situations which are happening. So hence the contextual intelligence comes into play at that point in time to be able to foster a cross-cultural communication effective. Now, leading teams. How do you define leadership? Leadership is the capability to influence a group towards the attainment of a vision. And sometimes it could be a large vision as well. So just like how Mahatma Gandhi influenced everyone, how Hitler influenced the Nazis towards the mission. So organizations need strong leaders as well as managers for optimal effectiveness, because so that they magnify the vision in front of them and make them realize the vision. And they say, and they feel it's realistic to move into that path, into that direction. So they join hands to move into that direction. So let us look at various leadership theories to understand who may be the leaders. Trait theories. Various strong leaders from the past, such as Buddha, Napoleon, Mahatma Gandhi, these are all leaders who have been generally described in terms of their traits. The Big 5 personality framework also helped to understand that. So traits can help predict leadership. Personality traits are big indicators of leadership. Traits are better able to predict the emergence and appearance of leaders rather than actually differentiating between effective and ineffective leaders. This means that if the person displays the traits openly and others view him or her as a leader, he or she need not be as successful in getting the group to attain its objectives, right? So if you take the example of Mahatma Gandhi, everybody believed in him. Everybody, his trait was such that, you know, it inspired everyone to be able to lead into the vision of his, right? He did not have to struggle and get to pick people one by one to be able to attain his objectives, right? Trait theory of leadership. So these are the 3 things that are involved in personality traits. The first is your ability, the supervising ability, your intelligence, your initiative ability, the personal traits, whether you're self-assured, whether you're decisive, whether you're masculine or feminine, maturity level of yours, working class affinity, all of that, these are your personal traits. What are your motivators? Need for occupational achievement, self-actualization, power over others, high financial rewards, job security. All these are your motivators, and these are your abilities, and these are your personal traits. So this is what it talks about. So trait theory of leadership talks about that. So while we have our personal traits with us, we are bestowed with specific set of abilities of ours, and we do this because of certain motivators. If I do not have the motivation for achievement, I may not be, my team may not be directed towards achievement of goals. My team may just work on sustenance because I do not show that as a vision. That's not my vision. That's not my motivator. Yeah. Behavioral theories, initiating the structure. It is the degree to which a leader may define and structure his or her role and of people in the search for goal achievement. Okay, how do you actually initiate and put the structure together? The extent to which you may define and structure your role and the people that work with you in the search of goal achievement. Consideration. Now, when we talk about behavioral theories, we talk about consideration that these leaders have. It is the extent to which an individual's job relationships are based on mutual trust, respect for people's ideas, and regard for people's feelings. Whoever works with you, you make sure that the relationships are bonded so well, they are intact. There is a mutual trust amongst the team members. There is a respect for individuals' identities. And there is a regard for people's feelings as well. So in another study by the Michigan group, two behavioral dimensions were outlined. The employee-oriented leader and the production-oriented leader. So one is employee-oriented, completely driven by the employee orientation. The orientation is completely towards the people. And one is production-oriented, which means the orientation is completely about the task. Now comes your, while leading teams, we also come across another theory, which is your contingency theory. Contingency theory is an organizational theory that claims that there is no best way to organize a corporation, to lead a company or to make decisions. So there is the combination of everything. So you cannot have one best way to, one best theory to be able to consider it as the best way to organize an organization. So some leaders tend to gain success in a particular situation while in another they might not be effective. Okay, some leaders may be very, very successful in this one particular situation, but he might just completely fail in another situation. And they might be such leaders may be appointed and if they've been failing, so these leaders may be appointed temporarily and are dismissed as the circumstances settle. So this is how even the organization works. So contingency theory of leadership can be explained through the widely used Fiddler's model. Now, what does Fiddler's model talk about? So it is developed by Fred Fiddler, and he proposes that effective group formation, effective group performance depends on the proper match between the leader's style and the degree to which the situation gives the leader control. So it is the style of the leader, how, which style, whether he's a participative style of leader, whether he's a democratic style of leader, and to the extent to which the situation allows him to control. Leadership styles, as Fiddler believes, the main factor in leader success is the individual's basic leadership style, which is your dominant leadership style. If a situation calls for a task orientation leader, while the individual in the leadership position is relationship oriented, then either the situation needs to be changed or the leader in order to achieve optimal performance, right? So if the situation calls for task orientation, if you require it, it depends on the requirement of the situation really. Okay, so if the situation requires a task orientation and the individual is completely a relationship and a people person, then the situation needs to be changed and be make it appropriate as per the leader, or the leader needs to go through a change to be able to bring optimal effectiveness. Defining the situation. Fiddler has identified three contingency or situational dimensions. Leader-member relations in the degree of confidence, trust, and respect members have in their leaders. Okay, so leader-member relation is very, so as per Fiddler, these are three contingency or situational dimensions. Next is your task structure. Third is your position power. The leader-member relations in the extent of confidence, trust, the respect that the members are giving, having in the leader. Structure of the task, the extent to which the job assignments are procedurized, whether they are scattered or they have been processed, they are already been procedurized. The third is the position power, which is the degree of influence a leader has over power variables such as, you know, hiring, whether he can, whether he is consciously competent of taking a decision as, you know, with regards to hiring, with regards to firing, with regards to discipline, salary increases, all of that. How, to what extent is he able to exercise power? So these are the three dimensions. Defining the situation. Fiddler has identified three contingency theory or situational dimension. As we mentioned earlier, Fiddler states that better the leader-member relations, the more likely, more highly structured the job is. If the leader-member relationship is very, very smooth, the more structured the job would be. And stronger the position power, the more control the leader would have. Because if their position is strongly put, strongly been recognized in the organization, the more control the leader would have. He also finds themselves in situations formed by combining the three contingency dimensions. This model proposes matching an individual's score with these situations to achieve maximum leadership effectiveness. So can you see this? So for example, charismatic leadership and transformational leadership. Charismatic leadership, here the definition is there. What are the characteristics that are required? Sensitivity to their environment and the need for their employer or followers. Articulate and visionary. Inclined towards personal risk-taking. Adept at using unconventional behavior. So this is what charismatic leadership is all about. But charismatic leadership and transformative leadership have a vision. Charismatic leaders will always have a vision. They are willing to take personal risk to attain the vision. They will tend to be more empathetic to people's needs. They would be very, very cognizant of, you know, the people's feelings. They will be able to display outstanding and exemplary behaviors. They are born with attributes making them charismatic. They are likely to be extroverted always. They are not introverted at all. They are always focused with people. They like to be interacting with the outer world. They are self-confident and they are achievement-oriented. Process by which charismatic leaders influence followers. They pronounce clearly and distinctly. In the beginning, I have mentioned that they very appealingly spell out the vision for a better future of the organization. They will share the outcome so well that people already feel connected the moment he shared. Presenting a formal statement of an organization's vision or mission. Communicating through words and actions. New set of values, set a tone of cooperation and mutual support. He brings in that congeniality in the entire discussion, in the entire direction. So he engages in emotion-inducing and unconventional behavior to display courage and conviction about the vision. He shows so much belief and so much confidence in his vision that everybody feels like joining hands and everybody goes and jumps on to do it, saying that I'm there, I'm there, I'm there. You get consensus like anything. Charismatic leadership and transformation leadership leaders. So we talked about charismatic leaders. Now we're talking about transformational leadership. Leaders who inspire people to surpass their interests for the betterment of the organization and tend to have an outstanding impact on people. So leader will just not, they will just not think about themselves at all. They will surprise their own interests, their hobbies, their likes, their dislikes, just for the end goal, which is the organization. And they will have outstanding impact on people. Transformational leaders like Nelson Mandela was one transformational leader who had transformed the entire nation. It's difficult to transform the companies of a people, but he has transformed their entire nation, isn't it? So he will always have a bigger impact. The leader will be able to have an outstanding impact on people. These leaders would pay attention to the concerns of the individual. They will always take care of everybody, what they think. Everybody's voices would be taken into consideration. They will encourage individuals to be creative in their problem-solving approach. They will excite and inspire to exert extra effort to attain the group objectives. They will command trust and commitment from people. So organizations with transformational leader tend to have greater decentralization authority because they will not centralize their authority. They will start making smaller leaders. Younger leaders, and they will decentralize the decision-making process. So managers with high risk-taking approach, compensation programs, focusing on long-term outcomes, and create greater agreement among senior management on organization's goal, yielding superior organizational performance. Because of the fact that they have decentralized the power center, they have decentralized the responsibilities and created accountabilities. So we will definitely foster superior organizational performance. However, transformational leadership may not be equally effective in all circumstances. Huh? You have to have that caveat in place that in some circumstances, a transformational leader may not work effectively. And they may tend to have larger effect in smaller privately held organizations than in larger organizations. So transformational leadership work better as per research that in smaller organizations rather than larger organizations. You can see this basic idea of transformational leadership. Idealized influence inspires and motivates people, creates an intellectual stimulation and individualized consideration. So can you see this? What are the factors that he considers? He considers contingent reward plus management by exception. Expected outcomes are made very, very clear. Performance becomes so committed to the goal because they feel so realistic, they so believe in his conviction of the vision that people perform beyond the expectations. So that's what his transformational leadership is all about. So he completely idealized influence. You're so believe, first is the leader, the belief in the leader itself. And he inspires and he motivates the team. And why they get motivated? Because they see the stimulation that he, the intellectual intellect that he brings, the knowledge that he has, the depth of information that he has, and individualize the consideration because everybody is taken care of. Everybody is made part of the process. Leading for future mentoring, which is one of the key. We have been talking about mentoring in the previous chapters as well. Most leaders tend to take on the onus of building future leaders. One of the valuable methodology used by them is mentoring. Mentoring is a senior employee who sponsors and supports a less experienced or a newer employee as a mentee. Mentoring relationships serves both career function as well as psychosocial functions. Because it helps in development of the career of the newer employee and also as a psychosocial mindset of a leader because he feels that the legacy of his leadership will be continued. Many organizations are now beginning formal mentoring, particularly for minorities and women. So people who do a comeback, women who are doing a comeback in their jobs and they require to scale up, so you assign them to a mentor. So a lot of organizations are starting to do this. What are the reasons of mentoring? Leaders believe their experience should be shared with the younger generation and want to provide a legacy, as I mentioned to you earlier, that it provides a legacy to them. They help, they ensure that, you know, their legacy has been continued by the newer generation. It provides direct access to the attitudes of employees, indicating any early warning signs. So if at all you, since you're mentoring your buddy, your mentee, you will get to know, you will be able to get a caution about if there is any early warning signs of any problem that he's going through, any organizational problems that he's seeing directly, because you may have a very macro view and your mentee might have a micro view. Limitations. There are certain limitations to mentoring. Not all people may participate with equal zest and zeal and equal rigor, and diversity of race, gender, and ethnicity. These may be restrictive for mentoring. Some people may not be comfortable with cross gender. Some people might not be, comfortable getting mentored by, somebody who's completely different background of culture. Formal programs may not be as effective as the informal ones owing to poor planning and design. So this might lack the whole commitment of the mentor because sometimes what happens, there is a mismatch between the work style and the need of the mentor and the mentee. And the mentor has to do much more things than just guiding the mentee. And sometimes there would be unmatch in terms of the time and the objective. So hence it leads into ineffectiveness. No individuals are perfect and hence so the leaders are not either. So by the influence of their position, many leaders, they would just shy away from the fact that they do not know something. So what they will do is they'll try put ways and means of covering up their own selves and they would not forthrightly agree that, you know, they are not experts and they tend to, they pretend to be experts in everything. Okay, because of the fact that they shy away from sharing that they are not. They're not conversant with something. Poor delegation. So many leaders being insecure do not transfer all the requisite jobs to their subordinates. They do not let go. So what happens is, as a result, these managers are overburdened in themselves. And if the subordinates are high performing, they become very, very insecure about it. So this leads to clutter and too much on the plate of the supervisor, of the leader. Okay, so he's overwhelmed with tasks, he's not delegating enough of it to his team members. The effective leaders should strike a balance in his delegation of tasks. Being close-minded, one of the biggest advantage of team or group of diverse people together is ideas and high creativity, which results into high performance. So if you being close-minded and not receptive about others' ideas, you may have a very, very ineffective leadership at your domain. So in order to make the advantage of the diverse group, the leader must be open-minded. Inappropriate leadership style. There can be numerous leadership styles, including telling style, selling style, consultative style, participative and empowerment style. So it has to be effective, appropriate leadership style as per the requirement of the mentee. Self before others approach. It's not philanthropy that it is expected of the leader to be effective. However, rather than focusing on self-serving interest, self-accomplishing interest, the leader should focus on the team's progress and growth, a cohesive growth and sustainable growth. So rather than just keeping his own interest in concern. Inability to handle power dynamics. So many leaders are not very comfortable with the power that comes with leadership. They do not exercise it enough. They do not empower people. They do not take the accountability. And the pressures of the leadership responsibility may render even dynamic leaders unable to fully embrace their roles. Even very, very dynamic leaders fail here because of the fact that they are not very, very savvy in handling power dynamics. So they will tend to either take a seat back or they will tend to just go with the flow without taking any decisions. They let the top management gives them direction. So in that case, what happens is ineffective leadership gets built up, and then the leadership below the level leadership also goes for a toss because they are also expected to work in the same manner. Poor consistency. Many leaders tend to be inconsistent in their interpersonal interactions. So sometimes they will be very great. There will be some regularly doing it. Sometimes because of the pressure, because of the month of the year, your pressure might be high and your targets might be not achieved. So then you may be inconsistent in communicating or delivering enough directions to your team members. This could be very challenging for the team members as they are unable to understand the leader. Then it will create a conflicting idea about the leader. Favoritism. This is, no matter how much we try, this works everywhere in an organization. It is a known fact that people get along better with some people than others. So this compatibility issue can exist between the leaders and his team members, his old team members versus new team members, where the leaders may get along better with some members in comparison to others. So this, no matter how much we try, the favoritism will always be there. Don't you think so? We like some of our family members and some we are not very, we might not like as much, or some we may just hate. And that no matter how well you're knitted your family is, you will still have the likes and dislikes in place. So it will still be there. So even in professionalism, it is there. So some people are more compatible to work with some people and some people completely work against them. So hence, we need to be balancing that. So that could pose as a barrier to effective leadership. Thank you so much.